Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB digital radio and on demand via the Bloomberg Business app and BloombergRadio.com.
We're joined by Greg Davis, who is CIO of Vanguard. He oversees $4 trillion worth of assets. Welcome to the program. Good morning.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
Yeah, really nice to speak to you. So the 60-40 portfolio has had this terrible start. How can investors dodge the pain? Give us a big take.
Well, I think investors have to take the long term into perspective. It's been a very, as you mentioned, it's been a very difficult start for investors globally, not just in equities, but in the bond market as well. But the thing to keep in mind is that even when you have such a negative start to the year, when we look at the data historically, if you have a 3-year time horizon for investments, what you'll find is that you will still produce positive returns somewhere in the neighborhood of 7% on average for an investor with a 3-year time horizon, even after we've had a correlated negative returns for both equities and bonds. And in the type of case that we've been in this time, it's been the bottom percentile for returns of a 60-40 portfolio. And even in that type of environment, we're still expecting that historically that returns over a 3-year time horizon have been somewhere in the neighborhood of about 5%. So for investors, they really need to keep the long term in perspective, and you're going to have these types of short term drawdowns that happen from time to time.
What are those short term pressures? Is inflation obviously something that we're all extremely concerned about? Is it inflation then that's the biggest risk, or is it recession?
Well, I think it's a combination. I think they go hand in hand. First, inflation is ultimately driving the activity from the variety of central banks, and what you're seeing in the U.S., just a pretty aggressive tightening pace that we've been seeing. That is clearly going to have an impact not just on, you know, the shape of the yield curve. We've already seen some inversion between 5s and 10-year notes in the U.S., but then also what's happening in terms of tightening financial conditions. So, you know, when we look at the Bloomberg Financial Conditions Index, we can see that they're actually close to a standard deviation tight relative to where they've been pre-global financial crisis. And so you're starting to see a real impact of the Fed's activity, and that will ultimately slow down the economy, should reduce demand, and ultimately have some impact in lowering inflation over time.
As far as recession, do you think?
Well, we're thinking that there's unlikely we're going to see a recession by the end of this year, but there is a probability. We have it somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 to 65% in the next 12 to 18 months. But we do believe that for the remainder of this year, we're probably going to avoid a recession, but that risk goes up substantially as you go into next year.
What is it that next year worries you?
Well, the biggest thing is, again, tightening financial conditions. The Fed, who's communicated they're on pace to continue to tighten interest rates. We're expecting at least somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 to 8 more rate hikes this year. So that's pretty substantial tightening. 175 to 200 basis points is a lot. And we've seen mortgage rates, if you think about the U.S. mortgage market and real estate market, where mortgage rates are close to 6% or so for a 30-year mortgage, which is almost double what it was a year ago. So that those types of activities will clearly have a bite on the economy.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're talking about kind of generational change, aren't we? And this is radical change in kind of a year. Do we end up, we're also digesting all of the central bankers from Sintra. Do we now go from what was an era of kind of real low interest rates into a period of much higher average inflation and kind of that on a sustained basis? Is that the thinking for this new period?
I mean, I think a big part of it depends on how much credibility the various central banks have. And if you were to look at five-year forward inflation expectations, at least in the U.S. market, they're anchored around 2.1%. So there's still a lot of credibility from at least the U.S. central bank. And we have the same feel for the ECB and the Bank of England. And ultimately, the market does believe they're going to be successful. And so when you look at five-year forwards at 2.1%, the market doesn't seem that concerned that in the long run, we're going to see a huge, huge lift in inflation longer term.
It's one of the questions from the ECB's point of view has been credibility in terms of being able to control yield spreads between Germany and Italy in particular was the most recent focus. Do you think the markets have that same confidence that the ECB now is going to be able to manage that?
I think that's still to be determined. You know, we've seen some spread widening in the US, but you're absolutely right. When you think about places like Italy and Spain, where you start to see spreads widening, that is a concern to the ECB to be able to hold that together. I mean, we've seen over the course of the last 10 years a number of times where those spreads have widened out, and it has a very negative impact on the broader market. So hopefully with the ECB and some of their buying programs, they have the ammunition to be able to help stabilize that if it were to get out of control.
Should central bankers have seen this coming? Yesterday you had a fair few mea culpas.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, this has been a very difficult environment, not just for investors, but clearly central bankers to try to navigate. I don't think anybody came into the year thinking there's going to be a war in the Ukraine and what's happened in terms of commodity prices and things of that nature. Could the variety of central banks been a bit more aggressive in terms of the pace of tightening at the beginning of the year? Probably. But at the end of the day, they're looking at the same data market participants are looking at. And they're trying to react to that data. And we also know that monetary policy operates on a lag basis. So they want to make sure they don't go too far ahead of themselves and see how the market ultimately resolves itself over time.
The S&P 500 closed at 3,818 yesterday. The all-time high in January was just under 4,800. Why do you think it'll be at the end of the year?
I mean, we tend not to make those types of calls. What we would say is, like, when we look at fair value for equities, what we'd say is that relative to our fair value model, which looks at cyclically adjusted earnings, but also takes into consideration where we are from an interest rate and an inflation standpoint, U.S. equities at least still look slightly overvalued to us. Mm-hmm. But when you start looking at more of the international, the global markets ex-U.S., they seem more fairly valued. And so when we think about returns over the next decade, we're thinking U.S. equity market returns are probably going to be in a neighborhood of about 4% annualized, but the international markets will produce returns that are closer to 7% annualized because valuations are more attractive outside of the U.S.
Is there an equity market that's undervalued, do you think, anywhere in the world? The U.K. maybe?
Well, you think about where U.K., the FTSE 100, you look at anything outside of the U.S., so taking into consideration all cap ex-U.S., many of those markets are trading with PE ratios around 10, where in the U.S. you're closer to 17. So anything other than the U.S. looks a bit more attractive from a valuation perspective, FTSE being included.
But that's largely driven by the tech names in the U.S.
Well, it's been driven by growth in general. Growth is just, it's tech, growth-oriented stocks in general. I mean, the valuations there and the performance there over the last 10 years has been outstanding relative to value stocks. And what we'd say is that, they have clearly contributed to the rise in overall valuations, but those same stocks are ones that are underperforming this year.
Are company profit margins the next shoe to drop?
Well, I think that's a concern in terms of earnings next year and for the remainder of this year. I think people came in with very robust expectations for 2022, but our expectations is you're going to see a decline in earnings growth next year, probably to the mid-single digits.
How much do political tensions between the EU and the UK worry you? We're seeing this ramping up of tensions again. We had Mara Šefčovič in this building last night saying the UK needs to take the gun off the table in negotiations. Do you worry about those sort of comments when you're looking at it from an investment standpoint?
We try to take the big picture into consideration, and ultimately we think situations like that will ultimately be resolved, but it does create short-term volatility. But what we tell our investors is stay focused on the long term. If you're saving for retirement, if you're saving for your kids' education or trying to buy a house, these short-term blips, which happen from time to time, are not your primary concern. Should be really focused on continuing to invest, put that money in a diversified portfolio, control what you can control regarding costs. And, if you have a long-term time horizon, a balanced portfolio, highly diversified, will serve you well.
Okay.
And avoid the noise.
Yeah. All right. I suppose then, would you tell people to buy cryptocurrencies, given the dramatic sell-off?
We are not, we do not recommend investors invest in those types of assets. I mean, they're speculative in nature. Again, we think more about portfolio construction from the standpoint of stocks, bonds, and cash. Crypto does not make our lineup.
Okay, a thought then also on China, as we're talking about the PMI data and the hopes of reopening, some reopening in China. I mean, we've talked a little bit about politics. Hard to avoid, though. How much exposure should investors have to China? Opportunities versus the risks of the regime there?
Well, yeah, I think the way we try to think about it is we want our investors to have a globally diversified portfolio that would include places like China. I think one of the things you always have to realize is that there's going to be ebbs and flows when different economies do really well, and there's going to be other, idiosyncratic factors that cause them to underperform. But again, a globally diversified portfolio that includes China is something that we've advocated for our clients, and we think that's the right way when you think about investing for a decade or longer.
And the question of active versus passive investing, is this a good time to be active?
We love both. If you're going to do active, the thing we always say is investors need to make sure that they're controlling their costs. The challenge with many active managers is they charge too much for the alpha they produce, and they tend to struggle against the index funds. So again, we think there's value in both strategies. We offer both, but low cost is the way to go if you're going to look at active.
Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB Digital Radio and on demand via the Bloomberg Business app and BloombergRadio.com. We'll be right back.